Hey guys, it's episode 532 of All Time Top 10. Welcome back to the show. We're going to get into some more alien songs in just a minute with our friend Gabe Scalone. Top 10 songs about aliens, part 2, coming up in just a moment, numbers 5 through 1. And more fun stuff with our friend Gabe. Before we get into that, though, we got to talk about Patreon, of course. October 1st was 2 days ago, and all the Patreon folks got in their inbox, as promised, a bonus episode, an exclusive bonus episode. We had the Wolfing Brothers on hand to do top 10 songs with insanely long titles, and that is a rewards episode for $10 tier member Ari, who just hit 6 months at the $10 tier. He got to pick the topic, and Chris and Justin Wolfing came through and installed for us for top 10 songs with insanely long titles. If you want to hear that, get on the Patreon thing. $2 a month, bonus episodes every month. You know the deal. Check it out at the website, alltimetop10pod.com. Over there on social media, we had 3 more entries into the ATTT 1000, the 1000 greatest songs we've ever heard. This week, we had number 871, Oasis, with Don't Look Back in Anger. I was asking you guys what the best anger or angry songs are. These are songs that have the word anger or angry in the title. All right, people. We had some good suggestions, though. I'm Not Angry from Elvis Costello, Ben Folds 5, One Angry Dwarf, and 200 Solemn Faces, Megadeth with Angry Again, and many more. But we want to talk about Don't Look Back in Anger from Oasis. Our friend Arnoikin on Instagram says that the rating for historical impact has to be 5 out of 5, at least from a European point of view. So I know how much they love Oasis over there. We love them here too, somewhat, for the most part, except for those who hate their guts. Man, people hate Oasis. People love or hate Oasis. That is what I've come to understand. At number 870, it was the Breeders with Cannonball. I was asking you guys who the ultimate female rocker of the 90s was. And lots of good suggestions there. Courtney Love, Sheryl Crow, Alanis Morissette, among others. But we want to talk about Kim Deal and her band, The Breeders, and the song Cannonball. Our friend at Detox Pod Guy on Twitter says, I feel like the first 100 or so times I heard Cannonball, it was in a crowded bar. Took me a while to get used to the song without people talking over it. It's a classic, though. 10 out of 10. And at James Cass on Twitter says, the whole album is great. One of my all-time favorites. Our friend Pete Davies on Facebook says, I once stood next to Kim Deal at the opening act for a Breeders show. Wasn't aware until my ex-wife informed me after Kim walked away to the stage. So we got divorced. Hope you're kidding, Pete. That's a horrific story. Sorry about that. Cannonball is the song, though, at number 870. At number 869, it's Morphine with Thursday. I was asking you guys what the best song about a day of the week is. You guys had some fantastic suggestions. Friday On My Mind, Friday I'm In Love, Tuesday Afternoon in Peak Hour from the Moody Blues, Stormy Monday, Gloomy Sunday. Obviously, there's tons of those, and we did do that episode. Look for that in the archives. But Morphine is the pick, and Thursday is the song. Michael Axelson on Facebook says, Morphine is so good. That's it. That's the comment. I appreciate that, Michael. Our friend Pete on Facebook says, I really like the Morphine call. Had tickets to see them exactly 1 week after he died on stage. Somebody asked, do you think it was drug-related? I said, the name of the band is Morphine. Enough said. Thank you, Pete. Thanks to everyone for your comments. I love this. I love when you guys are interacting with us and you're sounding off on these picks, because I feel strongly about these picks, and I hope others have opinions on them too. And the ATTT 1000 playlists are growing every week, and you can find those at Apple Music, Spotify, and YouTube. Find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for more of those this coming week. 3 more entries this week, and sound off. We want to hear from you. We do appreciate it. All right, let's get into this, though. Let's wrap up our talk with Gabe about aliens and the best songs about them. Roll the tape.
I'm down south recently. I'm playing a town called Fife, Alabama, all right? And it's right outside Sputnamburg, for those of y'all who need a point of reference, all right? Anyway, in this town, this is absolutely true. It was in all the papers. It was on CNN. Apparently, everyone in this town saw these UFOs. Everyone in the town saw the UFOs. Police chief, mayor, they all saw the fucking UFOs, all right? And I'm curious. I asked people what it was like. Oh, man, it was incredible, incredible. People came from miles around to look at them. A lot of people came armed. Excuse me? People are bringing shotguns to UFO sightings. Don't you think there's a point where we're going to drop the fucking weapons? I mean, the mothership comes. Maybe we don't know everything. Wow. Not like some intergalactic fucking skeet shoot. Ah, there goes one out. Bringing shotguns to UFO sightings, man. Kind of brings whole new meaning to that phrase, you ain't from around here, are you, boy?
Top 10 Songs About Aliens, Part 2.
We're back. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging around with us here on All Time Top 10. I'm back with the great Gabe Scalone over there on,
hey, everybody.
On Facebook Messenger. Good to see you, man. How was your week off? We're back for part two.
You know, I was so eager to do this, I didn't leave my seat. I've been sitting here for an entire week staring at the computer screen just waiting to record part two.
I know, I didn't want to be rude and hang up on you, so I stuck with you the whole week.
The whole time, man. Man, we have covered some ground, let me tell you.
Yeah, we ended up talking about the Orioles and baseball and other things, so, you know, we passed the time.
Yeah. You know. By about the middle of the week, we actually discovered the meaning of life, but by the end of the week, we had forgotten
it. That's right.
Damn.
Maybe we'll get it next time. Gabe is back. We're talking songs about aliens. And you have number five. What is it?
Okay, number five. So to remind the people, if you just happen to pick up on this episode, I'm doing my songs in kind of a colloquial type story format.
Sure.
And taking the lyrics to be literal, I wrote a story to go along with them. So my number five, I will start now. Ben, how about some music, please?
There you go. Enjoy.
The Fermi paradox is the conflict between the lack of evidence for extraterrestrial life and the high estimates for their existence. There are many theories for this paradox, but the one that always stuck out to me was the one put forth by Carl Sagan and Joseph Slovinsky in 1966. They speculated that technological civilizations will either destroy themselves or master their darker tendencies and survive for billion-year times scales. I mean, you can almost hear him say billion-year timescales.
Billions, yes.
So this is the story of what happens when Earth receives a visit from one of those billion-year-old civilizations. On April 18th, 1989, a starship exited a wormhole just behind the dark side of the moon. On board was a crew from the planet Vidoria, located in a sector of space they called 804. The Vidorians are a tranquil and magnanimous race of humanoids whose distant past isn't so different than ours. But unlike us, they were able to marshal the destructive aspects of their nature and now exist to make the universe a better place. For close to a billion years, they have been traveling the cosmos, offering assistance to those in need, purely out of the goodness of their 3 12-chambered hearts. Mm-hmm. The leader of this particular expedition is Subperlocutor Wave of the Distant Sea. Normally, a mission of this type is left to the legislature, but this trip was special. For you see, the little blue planet the indigenous people called Earth represent the farthest the Vidorians have ever traveled to help a people. And the humans' situation was so very desperate. First Vesselman, Strength of the Standing Ground, announced that the ship was now hidden behind their moon and they were ready to begin the operation. Fire of a Stout Arm, a junior communications vesselman, on his first voyage, turned to wave at the distant star and asked why they needed to hide. The sub-prolocutor placed one of his forehands on the helmsman's shoulder parentally and explained they could not just appear in orbit out of nowhere. That's something a slime creature would do. The Vidorian policy was to announce their presence first and then approach the planet when they were ready to receive them. And with that, Wave of the Distant Sea took a deep breath and ordered his crew to send the message on all frequencies. From the Zone 804, in peace, not war, we come to restore your planet. Fire of a Stout Arm asked how long it usually took for a response. Strength of Standing Ground replied that most of the planets he had dealt with in the past were quick to respond, knowing that they were here to fix their world. And yet, Earth did not respond. After a time, Wave of the Distant Sea asked if the planet got the message. His crew assured him that they did. The sub-prolocutor figured the Earth things must be a little shy and ordered the message sent again. Time passed and nothing. So once again, the message was sent, and once again, Earth failed to respond. Strength of Standing Ground was well aware Wave of the Distant Sea was a politician and not been on many contact missions, and the uncertainty in his eyes, especially his third one, was clear for all to see. But the first vesselman, who had been on thousands of these assignments, was just as baffled, and he said so much to the sub-prolocutor. The two discussed the possible reasons for the silence, yet nothing made sense. This planet's atmosphere was failing. Poverty and hunger were rampant, and the two biggest factions had so many nuclei-splitting weapons pointing at each other that they could annihilate the world 1,000 times over. They desperately needed the Vidorians' aid. Why would they not welcome it? As they continued their discussion, Fire of a Stout Arm spoke up and suggested they tap into the wire-based communication devices of the world leaders to see if they were even discussing the message. Wave of the Distant Sea agreed, and they sent out stealth probes to attach the communication hubs across the globe. Fire of a Stout Arm skillfully sifted through the information and stated that several leaders were talking about a festive gathering with something called cocaine and prostitutes. The junior vesselman thought that if some of the leaders were celebrating the Vidorians' arrival, maybe they just needed time to send out the invitations. Wanting as much information as possible, Strength of Standing Ground asked what the other leaders were discussing. Fire of a Stout Arm replied they were considering opening something called silos. Wave of a Distant Sea studied many of the Earthlings' words, but silo was not amongst them, and he asked for clarity of meaning. Fire of a Stout Arm searched the human word repositories and said it was a deep bin for sorting materials such as grain, which was a type of harvested food piece. Well, this was great news for the sub-prolocutor, who interpreted this as a type of peace offering. It's no small thing for a planet to offer a stranger food when so many of his own people were starving. With a smile on both of his mouths, Wave of the Distant Sea ordered the message to be sent again and to move the ship into planet's orbit. Many of the crew began cheering and offering each other forehand handshakes. Suddenly, Fire of a Stout Arm called out that silo had a secondary definition, which was an underground structure for housing a guided missile. Two of Wave of Distant Star's hearts sank, but the third held out hope as he asked which type of silos were opening. In response, the scanning vesselman said he had just detected the launch of over 11,000 nuclei-splitting projectiles, which represented a fourth of the world's arsenal. As his third heart dropped, Wave of the Distant Sea asked if the projectiles were targeted them, though he knew full well the answer, and it was confirmed. The order was given to open a new wormhole and to prepare for departure. Wave of the Distant Sea offered that some civilizations are just too self-destructive to survive. Strength of Standing Ground nodded his assent, and the ship pulled in the wormhole and returned to the cosmos.
Wow. I love their names, by the way. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I might have bit off a little more than I could chew, but the song we're going to play is Peter Schilling's Zone 804.
Nice. All right. Number five.
Number five. Zone 804.
Four from Peter Schilling, 1989.
Yes, it was. Though he had recorded a lot of the songs on this album earlier, and then re-recorded them for this his only English release. This album is just really fantastic. I think everybody should give it a shot. It's called A Different Story. It came out in 1989. It was recorded. A lot of the songs were recorded earlier and then re-recorded for this his only English release. And this also has Major Tom on it. But interesting thing about the album was he uses the sci-fi genre kind of as a metaphor. The whole thing is about, you know, basically, you know, nuclear war and how the planet's going to kill itself. Because, you know, he grew up in, you know, Berlin, right? He's 66 right now. So he basically grew up in the middle of the Cold War. And if you, you know, talk to, you know, the previous generation, like our parents and such, they talk about how scared they were, you know, every day growing up. Well, he was in, you know, Berlin. If something was going to happen in the Cold War, you know, Germany was going to be, you know, ground zero.
Yeah, I know.
And that must have been difficult to grow up in. And this particular album really kind of, if you read into the songs and don't just take them literally, you can see, you know, what he's trying to say, you know, through the metaphor of the science fiction. And I think it's something that everybody should listen to kind of appreciate what, you know, things must have been for, you know, the people that lived there at the time.
Yeah. Seems like an intense way to go about business. yikes. Thank you for that one. Let's go to number four. And I was just reading about the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio. It's the host of the 88th Air Base Wing, and they operate the airfield. Built around 1917 during World War One, it was used as a testing field for aviation experiments. And I'm not making this up. It was built on an ancient Indian burial ground. Of course, you could probably find the most of the United States is that at some point. In some ways, I guess. but in March 1952, the base was home to a newly established aerial phenomena group to study reported UFO sightings. including those in Washington, D.C. in 1952. By 69, the Foreign Technology Division, FTD, and its predecessor organizations had studied 12,618 reported sightings of UFOs. 701 of them remained unexplained when the Air Force closed its UFO investigations. And a 1968 report concluded that, quote, "There seems to be no reason to attribute the unexplained sightings to an extraterrestrial source without much more convincing evidence." Now, in an interview in 1988, Senator Barry Goldwater claimed that he had asked General Curtis LeMay for access to a secret UFO room at the Air Force base, and the general got really upset and said, "Not only can't you get into it, but don't you ever mention it to me again."
Or Curtis LeMay would drop a bomb on him.
Right.
Because that's what Curtis LeMay did. He bombed everything, and if he didn't bomb it, he tried to bomb it. For you history buffs, they'll understand that.
Was he one of the architects of Vietnam, and or was it Korea? Or?
Well, no, even earlier, back in World War II, he was one of the ones behind the firebombing of Japan. He was all in on bombing the shit out of Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what he did. He just loved to bomb shit, and he loved to blow shit up.
I love it when things go kablooey.
Yeah. It's like, all right, Barry Goldwater, I'm going to drop a bomb on your ass. And he probably would have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why can't Barry Goldwater know what's going on at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio, Gabe Scalone? What's going on there, especially in Hangar 18?
Ooh.
Hangar 18 in Area B is purported to be the repository of a crashed UFO from Roswell, New Mexico, and UFO research in general. In Season 2, Episode 8, the History Channel series Project Blue Book makes mention of Hangar 18 being a storage facility for the Roswell crash UFO and other alien artifacts. And our man Dave Mustaine wrote a kick-ass song about it with his band Megadeth from their seminal 1990 album Rust in Peace. This is Hangar 18.
Number 4, Hangar 18.
Shit fucking rocks, man. That is, it's Megadeth. Hangar 18, he spells it all out in the second verse. Foreign life forms inventory, suspended state of cryogenics, selective amnesia is the story. Believed, foretold, but who would suspect? Military intelligence, two words combined that can't make sense.
No, the military makes perfect sense.
Possibly I've seen too much. You know?
Possibly.
Yeah. That video, if you've ever seen the video, it's...
I haven't.
All kinds of creature effects. It's pretty wild. And then bonus shout out to the great Marty Friedman, who traded wicked guitar solos on that track with Dave Mustaine. The audience didn't get to hear at the end. The whole like second half of that song is just like shredding guitar solos.
Oh yeah,
it's like ridiculous, but it's so good. That's to me, that's, you know, the best Megadeth album by far. But that's Hangar 18. What's let's move on to number three.
All right, number three. Well, let's see. Ben, would you... I'm sorry.
I'm supposed to cue up some tunes for you.
Yes, Ben. Would you hit me with some music bed here?
Hold on. Okay, there it is. Sorry. Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to take a nap in this nice music bed. So here we go.
Very nice.
49-year-old Robert Branch was just beginning his midlife crisis. He truly believed his life had no significance, as nothing he ever did produced anything of value. Robert had opportunities. Matter of fact, he had more than most, but each chance offered him was squandered, and any and every choice he made turned out wrong. Robert was born to rich parents in 1925. His father had the foresight to predict the upcoming collapse, and the family made it through the Great Depression unscathed. As an only child, expectations for Robert were high. Naturally, he was enrolled in the finest of schools, of which he had little interest, preferring to while away his days sailing around Squam Lake with his friends. When he was 18, he hoped to fight in the war, but not to fight the good fight, mind you, but to possibly gain some glory or at least some self-respect, something his silver spoon life had yet to provide. But his parents wouldn't have that, and like so many other Rips families, the Branches greased the right palms and kept their son out of conflict. When many of his age were shipping out, Robert shuffled off to Harvard. Robert gave minimal effort to college, fully aware that his grades didn't matter, as he was predestined to take over his father's investment firm. Had he put forth even a modicum of effort, Robert might have been better equipped to run a successful company, but that was not to be. In time, Robert took over his father's firm, and during the subsequent years, constantly backed the wrong bear, and by 1977, the firm went bankrupt. As he looked over his life, Robert desperately needed to find one positive moment to hold on to, or what was the point of living? Halfway through a bottle of Jack, he realized the only warm memory he had was those carefree days, those halcyon days, spent drifting across Squam Lake. Then, after snorting a couple lines, Robert realized what he needed to do, and the next day he spent all his money on a 211-foot sailing yacht, which he christened the Squam Lake. And for once, Robert knew he had made the right choice. Living off the millions he had stashed on offshore accounts, he was no fool, Robert set out for the open sea. For the first time, he felt his life had value, and he was eager to face the new one that was ahead of him. 6 months later, on July 7, 1977, the Squam Lake was 3 days out of Bermuda sailing for Nassau. Robert untangled himself from the barely conscious island girl that he had rented for the trip and staggered out of the cabin onto the deck. He was still coming down from the stuff he picked up in Haiti that the two had consumed the previous night. He flopped down on a deck chair and began to study the moon, which, to his surprise, he found that there was three of them. He was just about to drift off when he was overcome by a blinding light and a deafening hum. As his eyes adjusted, he saw what he believed to be a gathering of angels above him. The hum started to undulate and then become words. Come sail away. Come sail away. Come sail away with me. Robert didn't understand what they were getting at, but they kept repeating the quest over and over and over again. At this point, the island girl had joined Robert on deck and was apparently so captivated by the angels, she began waving at them. Suddenly, the angels stopped and pointed at a glowing craft that had just appeared on the starboard side of the boat. A small hatch opened, and the angels then resumed their endless appeal, this time louder. Robert knew the next choice he made would be the most important in his life. Should he continue to live the life he now values, or should he throw it all away and join these very sketchy angels in their glowing ship? He took the island girl's hands, and together they climbed off the boat. Several days later, debris from a 212-foot sailing yacht began to drift up on Bermuda's west coast, and the Sklom Lake nameplate was amongst it.
Wow.
So you tell me, did he make the right choice or not?
I don't know. This guy seems like kind of a jerk, so I don't really care what happens to him.
I don't know. I blame the Haitian stuff. Well, I mean, you know, there's no blame no surprise as to what song this is. It's
blame the writer of that stuff. This Come Sail Away?
This Come Sail Away, yeah.
From Styx. Oh, God. Gotta love Styx. If you ever get a chance to watch early MTV videos, there's actually a playlist that shows the first 100 videos ever played on MTV. And I think like 8 of them are from Styx. And they're all ridiculous.
Well, they're so theatrical, and most of that was Dennis DeYoung,
right?
And I remember a story about this. I'm paraphrasing, but this was one of their first big songs, and to get publicity for this, Tommy Shaw used to go around to radio stations with bags of cocaine, and bribe the program directors to maybe play this song, and apparently it worked.
Hey, the good old days.
'70s.
Yep. Kirk, Justin, and Chris say Come Sail Away. Number three.
Come Sail Away.
Yeah, come sail away, man. the glory, you know, the gloriousness of the over-the-topness and the unrelenting, you know, sticksness of it all.
I tell you, it is so very Sticks. And I think that's what really makes, you know, Sticks such a cool band, because you have two totally different, you know, we got Tommy Shaw, who's just a, you know, Southern rocker. And then we got Dennis DeYoung, who's, you know, Broadway. And it just, the tension works. And, you know, everybody likes Sticks. I mean, how can you not like Sticks? Or at least, you know, the Dennis DeYoung years.
Yeah, I dig, what's the one, Renegade.
Oh,
that's
good
Sticks,
song.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, that's good stuff, man. I'm glad you went there. It was definitely one of the big ones, you know. Like,
yeah, for sure.
It
surprises most people because, as I've always said, you know, nobody really listens to the lyrics. And when I mention this to people, that, you know, the song's, you know, about alien abduction, like, no, it's not. Listen to the song. Listen to the lyrics. Oh, come on. I've heard that song 1,000 times. Listen to the lyrics. Look up the lyrics. Listen. Yeah. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I didn't know that for the longest time either, to be honest. I thought it was just about getting on a sailboat or some shit.
No, no.
Hanging out with Christopher Cross on a schooner.
No, it's about these sketchy aliens that dress up like angels and abduct people off boats.
I'd go. I'd check it out. what I got? Something better going on here? Come on. No, I'm just kidding. let's go to number two. And I just found out a little piece of information from you, and I will not steal from you. So I'm going to go with an alternate here. And we got to talk about hip hop and the first hip hop that most people have ever heard. And the rap goes something like this. Go out to the parking lot and you get in your car and you drive real far and you drive all night and you see a light and it comes right down and lands on the ground and out comes a man from Mars and you try to run, but he's got a gun. And he shoots you dead, and he eats your head. And then, what happens? You're in The Man from Mars. this is Blondie, of course. With Rapture. What do you think?
Oh, love it. It was one of my alternates. This is a classic song.
Yeah. And yes, it is slightly a bit of cultural appropriation, you know. This is definitely the first number one song that had rapping in it. So while Grandmaster Flash, Afrika Bambaataa, Curtis Blow, and the Sugar Hill Gang and others created hip hop, Debbie Harry and Blondie cashed it in with the first number one hit with rapping on it.
Well, I mean, throughout her, all the lyrics are shout outs to, you know, the different
Freddy
rap acts. And, you know, she was, and still to this, you know, remain friends with Fab Five Freddy for years. And, I have a quote here by Fab Five Freddy, and he said, for a lot of the white mainstream public, it was the first time they'd ever heard anybody rap, and it kind of paved the way, you could say, for what was about to come. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a good song. You mean, you can argue as to the appropriation, but the fact that she called out and shouted out so many people in the song, I think she was trying to say, hey, look, I'm not a rapper, but this is some cool shit. Mm-hmm. So give it a listen. Give it a listen. Because, I mean, this is, you know, like, what, 79, 80.
This is 1980. Yeah, here's a little bit from songfacts.com. Hip-hop promoter and future host of Yo MTV Raps, Fab Five Freddy, is in the video and is mentioned in the song. He was part of the early rap scene and is credited with helping bringing it to the mainstream. Blondie originally met Fab Five Freddy and his crew at a club. They all became friends, and one day frettingly joked that Debbie Harry should write a song about them. She did, and the result was the rap that is the second half of the song. She sent it to Freddy. He and his crew loved it, and she ended up recording it. And also featured in the video is a cameo from Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Yeah, he was the DJ as she's walking across the bar floor, looking so shy and scared.
Yeah, she could do no wrong at this time, Debbie.
Oh, she, man, Blondie's the best.
She can still do no wrong to this day.
I still. Lover.
That's right. Rapture is number two. Jeffrey, Bill, Colin, Justin, Chris, Jeff, and Rick want to hear it. And let's check it out. Number two.
Number two, Rapture.
Francois, c'est pas flush, ain't no duke, and you don't stop. Sure shot, go out to the parking lot, and you get in your car and drive real far, and you drive all night, and then you see a light, and it comes right down and lands on the ground, and out comes a man from Mars, and you try to run, but he's got a gun, and he shoots you dead, and he eats your head, and then you're in the man from Mars. You go out at night, eating cars, you eat Cadillacs. You keep on eating cars. Then, when there's no more cars, you go out at night and eat up bars where the people meet. Face to face, there's cheek to cheek. One to one, man to man, there's toe to toe. Don't move too slow, cause the man from Mars is through with cars. He's eating bars, yeah, wall to wall, door to door, hall to hall. He's gonna eat them all. Rapture, be pure, take a tour through the sewer. Don't strain the rain, pain the train.
Now you see what you want to be. Just have your party on TV, because the man from Mars won't eat up bars where the TV's on. Now he's gone back up to space, where he won't have to hassle with the human race.
It's good stuff.
TV's scared him away. The man from Mars can't handle TVs, apparently.
Well, if you think about it, rap in the late 70s and 80s, was like that. It was, fun and goofy and... you had a good time with it. So, why not? Man from Mars eating cars.
And now he only eats guitars. That's number two. We are here at number one. I asked you a simple question. Do you have any David Bowie? And there's lots to choose from. I had a David Bowie song, so I switched it out for Blondie just because I didn't want to step on your toes.
Well, that's appreciated, and I think it was probably a foregone conclusion that this would be number one. So I'm doing a little something different with this one. I had written up something, but then I found this crazy interview from 1974 from Rolling Stone, where William S. Burroughs was interviewing David Bowie, and they talk about Ziggy Stardust and the song Starman. Now, basically, the whole album you know, Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust. It's a concept album, though a concept album after the fact. So any of those songs could really fall on this list. But for me, I chose Starman. And I'm going to let the story be told by Bowie in his words. I had to massage this a little bit and add a few things to make the story flow. But basically, this all came forth in this particular interview between David Bowie and William S. Burroughs. And if you can find it, read the whole thing. It's fantastic. It's online, Rolling Stone, February 28th, 1974. And read Bowie and Burroughs discuss. It's fantastic.
Okay.
So I guess if you want to put some kind of music bed here, maybe a Bowie-esque bed. But, you know, here we go.
All right.
So this is Bowie speaking to William S. Burroughs, and William S. Burroughs had asked about Ziggy Stardust. So Bowie starts. The time is 5 years to go before the end of the earth. It's been announced that the world will end because of lack of natural resources. Ziggy Stardust appears just after the announcement, proclaiming himself to be a strong and remorseless androgynous alien who enjoys anal sex and worships at the Church of Man Love, and he has come to the planet to inspire an apathetic youth that have access to all things they thought they wanted, because the older people had lost touch with reality and the kids were left on their own to plunder anything. Ziggy was in a rock and roll band, and the kids no longer want rock and roll. There's no electricity to play it. Ziggy's advisor tells him to collect news and sing it because there's no news. So Ziggy does this, but there's nothing but terrible news. Ziggy is then advised in a dream to write a song about the coming of a Starman. So he writes the song Starman about this amazing spaceman who will be coming down to Earth to save us. This is the first news of hope that the people have heard, so they latch on to it immediately. The Starman that he's talking about are called the Infinites, and they are black hole jumpers, but no one knew that at the time. Now, Ziggy starts to believe in all of this himself, and he thinks himself to be a prophet of this future Starman. He takes himself up to incredible spiritual heights and is kept alive by his disciples. The Infinites, in their original state, are antimatter and cannot exist in our world. So when they arrive, they tear Ziggy to pieces on stage and take bits of him to make themselves real. As soon as Ziggy dies, the Infinites take his elements and make themselves visible. It's then discovered that the Infinites are of no possible use to us, and they don't have a care in the world. They just happen to stumble in our universe by black hole jumping. Their whole life is traveling from universe to universe. So that's basically the tale of
Ziggy, you know, Stardust.
Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and particularly the song Starman, and right. Told mostly from Bowie's mouth.
That's great. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. And like you said, there's more, so I definitely want to...
Oh, the interview. You may find a truncated version, but make sure you go to the specific Rolling Stone one. It's a huge interview, and I mean, they cover a lot of ground. It's fantastic because Bowie is a huge Burroughs fan, obviously. Just look at, you know, a lot of his earlier work.
I'm sure he was like honored to talk to William Burroughs, you know.
Oh my god, yeah. And you can totally tell it's it's a great interview.
Nice. Well, we had a whole bunch of picks for David Bowie songs, including Ziggy Stardust, which was requested by Trin, Space Oddity, requested by Tim, Memory of a Free Festival, requested by Adam, and Loving the Alien, requested by Steve and Rick. I had Oh You Pretty Things from Hunky Dory, but Bill, Katie, Colleen, Helen, Justin, Chris, and Rick say Starman, and... so does our friend Gabe Scalone. It's number one. Yeah.
Number one.
Starman.
Was laying
the soul is there. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade, came back like a slow voice on a wave of faith. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy cosmic time. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children use it. Let the children use it. Let all the children do get. Look out your window, I can see his light. If we can sparkle, he may land tonight. Don't tell your papa, or he'll get us locked up in time. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star.
There it is, the Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, you know, but yeah, I don't know. Thinks he might blow our mind.
Yeah, he might blow our mind, but or he may jump out of a black hole and disintegrate us, and then use our pieces to instantiate himself into our reality. That's he could do that.
All right, whatever you want to do, man.
Hey, man, this is Bowie's thing.
Just get it over with.
It's interesting because you, I'm sure we all know the album well, and it wasn't initially supposed to be this concept album, but they, after Bowie, you know, was listening, says, wait a minute, there's kind of a theme here, and I think I can, yeah, I think I can maybe put this together, and they tweaked it a bit, and, you know, we have Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Fires from Mars.
Have you seen the film Moon Age Daydream yet?
I have.
And thumbs up, thumbs sideways. There was some mixed reviews, I heard.
Mostly thumbs up.
Yeah. I heard it's like, don't expect an actual documentary.
No. And there's so much stuff out there about Bowie. And there's so much stuff Bowie was, ran plenty of interviews. You know, there's plenty of stuff out there just from his own words. So, you can find out stuff about him. You can...
But you know, Moon Age Daydream won't give you that. It just gives you like an immersive experience. Is that right?
Yeah, it was nice. You know, the music was good. It was certainly well put together. But I mean, it wasn't like, wow, I had no idea this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. But I've heard, you know, in the theater especially, it's pretty fantastic. So may have to splurge for that. But that's our number one. We're going to find out what our honorable mentions are in just a moment. But right now, it's time for the bonus track of the week for part two. This is the song requested by our friends on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
As chosen by our listeners on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the Listener Pick Bonus Track of the Week, selected by our friends on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Okay, this has been Top 10 Songs About Aliens, Part 2. Thanks again to our man in Maryland, the great Gabe Scalone. We miss you, buddy. Get your ass back out to LA now. All right. Thanks anyway, Gabe. We love you. Here are the songs you guys were voting on to represent the bonus track of the week for Songs About Aliens Part 2. We had Blink 182 with Aliens Exist. We had CCR with It Came Out of the Sky. We had the Dickies with Killer Clowns from Outer Space. But the winner this week was in the running last week, came in second, came in first this week. It's Porno for Pyros with the song Pets. This is classic 90s stuff. Perry Farrell and other members of Jane's Addiction doing something a little different. And this is a great little song about aliens and how, you know, we're kind of blowing it here on Earth. And maybe aliens could do a better job. So, yeah, we'll make great pets. Thanks to Kelly and Dan who requested this one, and to everyone that voted for it. The bonus track of the week.
Listener pick.
Bonus track of the week. Thanks everybody for your picks and your votes. Gabe Scalone, do you have any more songs to talk about? Honorable mentions. Anything?
Yeah, I had a few. Tool, Rosetta Stone,
right,
is an absolute blast. I'm sure you've heard it. I had Is That You, Modine? I had I Ran from Flock of Seagulls. Subterranean Homesick Alien from Radiohead. I had Starship Trooper from Yes. I have Ella Fitzgerald, Two Little Men and a Flying Saucer, which was really cool. Caught in the Crossfire by April Wine, which is just a lot of fun. Deep Purple, Space Truckin'.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that. So, yeah, what'd you have?
I had It Came Out of the Sky from CCR.
Mm-hmm.
Fun tune from them. Porno for Pyros, the song is Pets. When Martians come to Earth, we'll make great pets. Fountains of Wayne. I've never been a Christmas song kind of guy, but I always loved their classic, I Want an Alien for Christmas. I did have Come Sail Away. I had I Ran So Far Away. I had Subterranean Homesick Alien from Radiohead. I had Spaceman from The Killers. And then last but not least, I had Mothership Connection, Starchild from Parliament.
Parliament, yeah, good stuff.
Yep.
So. I really think Bootsy Collins is from another planet. He just has to be. He's just too cool for this planet. So
astronomical. That's what, that's what, if you ask him that, that's what he'll tell you.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Gabe Scalone, everybody. Woo!
Yeah.
Thanks so much for doing it. Hope things are cool over there in Maryland. Hanging.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, well, you know, we say it every time, but get your ass out here, man.
Yeah, I know.
Teleport yourself. Get some aliens to help you out.
Maybe if I concentrate hard enough, they'll hear me.
Well, you need a whole group of people to all concentrate all at the same time. Otherwise, yeah. So
I do have a theme song for that, so we'll
right on. Thanks so much, man. Thanks everyone for listening. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to All Time Top 10 by finding us at all the places that you get podcasts, and look us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. vote on the bonus track of the week, weigh in on the ATTC 1000, and say hello. Please say hi to us. If anything else that we have going on, including the Patreon thing and the archives, they're all at our website. Our man Gabe Scalone put together for us some months back. It's at alltimetop10pod.com. It's looking great, man. I'm still wowed that I even have my own website, but you know,
I think it's a really cool website. I know that's blatant self promotion, but you know,
yeah, absolutely.
I visit it all the time and just stare at it because it's so pretty.
You just want to stare at your Photoshop work because
it's basically just the Deborah Harry, you know,
just that part of it. Fair enough.
I put her on there twice.
Is the man from Mars on there too?
No, he's not there.
Oh, yeah, he's off eating bars and shit. Anyway, thanks, dude. Thanks.
But David Bowie is trying to eat her foot.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, everyone go look at that. Gabe went through painstaking detail to put his little collage thing together, and it's really cool. So thanks again for doing that. Go to alltimetop10pod.com to look for all of Gabe's handiwork. I think we're out of here. What do you say?
Yeah, let's get out of here.
All right. Thanks so much, dude. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, peace out.
It's like, all right, Barry Goldwater, I'm going to drop a bomb on your ass.